Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Symmetry of Souls, weekly two-hour study of the Urantia Papers. We are seeking to grasp the fifth epical revelation in a synthetic wholeness. Tonight, paper 49, section 6, it's the conclusion to our arc, our local system of inhabited worlds. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun. I'm Brad Garner, and that hymn is brought to you by perhaps a vision of the mansion worlds. We'll see. We'll talk about some of that tonight. Glad that you're here with us. Tonight, it's Dr. Chris Halverson, Andrea Barnes, Justin Armstrong, and you. Won't you call up the text of the Urantia Papers however you see fit and settle into your seat for 1% of your week? Hello there, Dr. Chris.
Hello, Brad. Hello, Justin and Andrea. Everyone is joining us as we wrap up this arc. And we've got all kinds of details remaining here on expanding on that final series that they introduced us to at the end of last week, the techniques of terrestrial escape. There's familiar stuff, additions to familiar stuff. There's complications to familiar stuff. It's a it's an interesting section that that definitely takes mankind into a recognition of the complexities of what happens to you when you die that mankind has never imagined. So it's very interesting, both from that factual perspective. But as always, it's not a revelation of truth unless we seek that truth. So we'll find facts, but we'll seek truth. Hope everyone enjoys as we wrap up this arc.
Thank you, Chris, for that little intro and, of course, a reminder of how we try to approach things here on Symmetry of Soul. Doesn't matter if we're in part one, two, three, or four, we try to bring the words that are on the page to life, into our own lives, into our hearts, and use them as a guide for our life so that they don't become crystallized dead forms. And Andrea, good evening to you. How's everything out your way?
Everything's just great, Brad. I'm sure glad to be here this evening. I'm looking forward to tonight's study.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. It's been an enjoyable arc. We've all kind of we've had a number of co-hosts kind of coming and going. We've been trying a new rotational format. We'll continue experimenting with that as we move forward. But here we are tonight. We've also all sort of parceled out summary duties in the wake of our longtime summary writer, Kermit Anderson, retiring last summer. We've parceled that out a bit. And speaking of which, Justin, so glad that you're here this evening. And, well, what can you tell us about what we were up to last week?
Good evening, Brad. Good evening, Dr. Chris, and good evening, Andrea. I have a summary from last week's study, so here we go. Truth applies universally. It is above linear facts, and it can uplift any passage in the revelation. What is the truth behind the following statement in paper 110, paragraph 2, section 1? The adjusters respect your sovereignty of personality. They are always subservient to your will. The thought adjuster imprisoned in your mind is subservient to your will because the Father's love for you is infinite. His love is so profound that he gave each person absolute sovereignty over the domain of personalized self, of spiritualized mind, the inner life. The inner life is the interplay between the upper domain of your mind and the cosmos. It is the part of you that is created. Regarding the significance of love, we read in 1 Corinthians 13, 1 through 3, if I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. The nature of God is the physics of God. There is a physics to matter, to mind, and to spirit. There is a holistic physics to the cosmos itself. However, the Father is absolutely transcendent of the downstep facts of time and space. In truth, he is a universal Father, and his love follows us now and throughout the endless circle of the eternal ages. We began our reading, paper 49, section 5, The Planetary Series of Mortals. In truth, the human design can be discerned in the original protoplasmic cell of a given world. All life is developing for the single purpose of the emergence of human will. Mortals uniformly have brains and nervous systems. However, there are variations of 1, 2, and 3 brained types. The three basic brain mechanisms are represented in even the pre-human animals of a given world. Evolution is fostered by both upwelling and downwelling influences. A three-brain mortal has the potential for a superadditive contrast of individuality and unity aspects of mind activity. The functional aspects of a three-brain mechanism are superior to the 1 and 2 brain types. A thought adjuster has a much clearer path in influencing a three-brained mortal compared to a 1 or 2 brain type. The material brain fundamentally frames the limits agitant mind engagement. However, all humans have the potential to utilize the full capacity of agitant mind, regardless of their initial inferior or superior brain endowments. The seventh agitant of wisdom introduces a directional activity that is fundamentally not present in the animal mind. The mind of an animal is being drawn through space, whereas a genuine human is driving themselves through space. A human mind can be adventurous because they are directionized. The interface between the upper domain of spiritualized mind within the cosmos is influenced by certain glands comparable to the pituitary bodies. The fluid nature of this interface is determined by the functionality of these glands, and this spirit receptivity is independent of the hierarchy of the 1, 2, and 3 brain types. Spirit reception is modified and based upon gland chemistry. There's a literal aspect to the idea that you are the temple of God, and the Spirit of God dwells in you. Planetary mortal epochs include different types of humans in each particular epoch. Man's terrestrial status and his reception of celestial ministry is conditioned by this classification. The first adjudication of the living and the dead is simultaneous with the arrival of the planetary prince. The living are included in the dispensational resurrection if they were conceived prior to the transition of a new dispensational boundary. Upon death, these souls will continue the paradise ascent belonging to a particular classification of planetary mortal. When reflecting on these unique epochs, remember that with each new dispensation, the spiritual environments are changing, and therefore the beings that are subject to this new environment are of a separate classification. With regard to our planet's current dispensation, we enjoyed the signal honor of becoming the mortal home planet of the sovereign sun. It is time to be about the Father's business. There are classes of universe creatures that independently foster a kindred nature on different spheres. A composite core of long-experienced finaliters periodically inspect these uniquely related groups, and they are likely coordinated through the functioning of Supreme Deity. The spiritual classification of all mortals prior to fusion is determined by the relationship of personality status and the Divine Father fragment. Not all local universes are uniform in adjuster-indwelled candidates for eternal fusion. Human life is initiated through natural birth. However, the technique of terrestrial the techniques of terrestrial escape are complex and worthy of further study and reflection. And there ends the summary.
All right. Thank you, Justin. No, that was excellent. Again, I really appreciate your use of words and your pacing. Middle-aged, I got to temper my expectations. I wish I could be measured the way that you are in your dispensing of thoughts. I'm more amped up. And I don't even have to drink caffeine anymore. So I don't know what it is with me. But thank you for that. It was great. I do have one thought. I know we also have quite a bit of reading to round out our arc in fair fashion tonight, but I want to first see if there's anything on the top of anyone's mind or any points to clarify or expound upon.
I have a few things I want to step through, but let's cover anything that the three of you have first here.
Well, the thought that I wanted to offer, and I really hope it's not a huge rabbit hole. It's just more, it's a little bit of an observation of my own life. We talked last week about gland chemistry, only briefly. It wasn't a science class. And I fully well expect, and I think I understand, that there are people who would listen to last week's show trying to divine some secret of contacting spirit by consuming something or doing something to your body. And maybe you can just tell by the tone of my voice, I've probably been too far the other way. I've taken a less than charitable view of people who are trying to approach spirit from a, as I call it, a physicalist point of view. Like, oh, I just need to drink this powder and that'll amp up my pituitary gland and then I can talk to my thought adjuster. Like, that really sounds like magical thinking to me. But I know that I'm probably being too antithetical or, too antipodal to, I mean, we are body, mind, and spirit. I've been all stuck in my mind most of my life, and I'm to the detriment of my body, probably. I'm a nerd. So I'm just wondering, when is there anything else to say when we read this thing that directly says that glands influence our interface with spirit somehow? How do we keep ourselves from going overboard and trying to, drink the latest, fashion drink powder craze to try to talk to God better?
Yeah, there's an important point that needs to be emphasized, not just when they tell you about the gland chemistry, spirit reception mystery, but in general, when we talk about the fact that your agitated mind is attuned to your biology, and as Justin was reminding us in the review, we were talking about various ways last week that our biology, including very significant alterations like being a three-brainer instead of a two-brainer, but just without any specifics, just the general concept that you can have a higher agitated mind function because you have a more well coordinated biologic mechanism. This could produce the same fool's quest that you're bringing up, Brad. The general thought of can I analyze my body and figure out how I can tweak things, supplements should I have to, give myself a biologic uplift, because Adam and Eve blew it.
Right, right.
And the key thing here, so in general, whether it's talking about the gland chemistry or whatever like this, is that we're talking about, when we talk about an attunement, it's in the super additive, I shouldn't even make it even remotely that simplistic sounding, in the very super summative nature of our biology. Our minds are attuned to this basically unanalyzable, in any immediate way scientifically recognizable nature of our body, our gland chemistry and whatnot. If you analyze your DNA, or if you analyze, the hormones in your body, you come up with all sorts of analytic conclusions, about, okay, so this hormone, seems to regulate these body mechanisms and yada, yada, yada. Okay. But see, that very linear, that very down in the plane, assessment that is, like I was saying a second ago, that is really kind of all that is basically possible, maybe way in the future, right, when we have light and life, quality physics here or something, this will be different. But right now, you're not going to analyze gland secretions and go, oh, it's obviously that hormone.
Right.
And so if I just take a supplement with that hormone, I'm going to be the most spiritual person, in human existence. I'm going to transcend Jesus of Nazareth.
Right.
Okay. Now, literally, when we have the biology that people in this world will have, in light and life, every human will biologically transcend Jesus of Nazareth. I mean, every human's basic mind functioning will be way transcended to Jesus of Nazareth's mind activity. Okay. But it's an extremely complex, subtle thing that we can't even remotely begin to figure out at this point. We're just beginning to kind of figure out some of the very linear things that say, your DNA strands. It's like, I think that gene right there, does these things. Okay, but there's these incomprehensible, super summative things where because there's these 38 genes all influencing the body at the same time, there's this, intangible supersummative consequence that your mind is attuned to. And you need to figure out how somehow to change that supersummative consequence, not how to change some, individually analyzable, molecular phenomenon. So it's a fool's errand right now to even imagine, doing this. And all you're going to end up doing is believing that if you, augment this, take this supplement, diminish that, whatever, that it's going to be better. But you're just going to destabilize some inscrutable, subtle equilibrium of your chemistry, and it's that equilibrium that your mind is attuned to, not the basis for that equilibrium.
Right, right.
Okay. So
that would happen. At best, you'll do nothing, and you'll just kind of delude yourself, and maybe think more positive thoughts. But it's not real. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the key things that can force you, if one will constrain oneself logically, rigorously, enough, is clearly knowing that. When we're talking about mind energy, absolutely transcendent, foundationally, of physical energy.
Yes. Right?
At the foundation of those two energies, right? Because there's independent absolutes of those two energies. There's an absolute of mind and there's an absolute of matter, and they're absolutely separate absolutes. Okay. I mean, at the foundation, there is absolutely no, interplay between the two. Right? So, it just again reminds you that if there's going to be this so-called attunement of mind to biology, it has to be, in some very transcendent, rarefied conceptual space, where transcendent of the absolutes that divide the two energies, there's some super absolute interplay between the two. Right? So, for me to think, oh, if I just add this molecule, I'm going to modify the super absolute functioning of deity. I mean, just say that to yourself. Just listen to how absurd that sounds. Okay? So, you know, we're very dependent upon those who know such physics having designed that physics into us.
Right.
We can't do anything about, you know, the back mating and the absence of removing the defective and degenerate strains and, you know, the lack of biologic uplift, all these things. I mean, we can't, you know, we can't do anything about all that. Okay, but, you know, but nonetheless, I mean, the only reason that I'm able to talk right now, right, and reflectively try to express myself right now is because there's some inscrutable phenomenon going on that current science is, you know, absolutely ignorant of. You know, not relatively. I mean, part of them being absolutely ignorant is they literally absolutely assume that there is no such thing as mind energy. You know, most of these scientists.
Yeah. See how far that gets you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and they're imagining that, you know, that I can do what I'm doing now and being conscious and talking to you because some sort of magical matter phenomenon in my brain.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, it's all, you know, it's very important to just be very humbly respectful of what you have merely by the grace of God. You know, by the grace of God, the decimal world vicissitudes and the rebellion and the default, you know, haven't so messed up my biology that I'm not conscious right now.
Yeah.
Right? And just to know that, you know, when all is said and done, I don't have the slightest clue and neither does anyone else why I'm conscious, let alone how I could have a higher consciousness and attempt to be improving that. So don't mess with your body's chemistry.
That's all well stated,
you know,
Chris.
It's got to be so tenuous right now in the first place.
Yeah. It reminds me, well, just the analogy, it reminds me that there's at least an urban legend that in the 1890s, the U.S. Patent Office briefly considered closing their doors because, quote, pretty much everything's been invented, you know, a very hubristic statement. But I feel like, you know, how far off would you be from that if you're like, well, we've basically, scientific dictation has basically got everything figured out now. We understand why we're here. We understand consciousness. Like, they don't even have the correct predicates to explore those topics. Why would you think they have it all figured out? We don't understand what we are right now. The revelators are trying to give us a starting clue about our actual nature, but we don't actually know what is a finaliter. It's a word symbol. What am I really? Don't know.
So trust what you have. Humbly seek to utilize what you have naturally. Right, man cannot cause growth. Okay, so you're not going to build a higher consciousness. Right, how do you achieve a higher consciousness? It's not through chemistry. It's through taking delight and cultivating.
Yeah, I was going to emphasize. You could look at it the bottom-up mode and trying to improve the biology itself, and then you could go really high, as Chris just did, in looking at the coordination of deity of these different energy systems, mind and matter. But then in the mid-stage, you also have just the mind-energy system itself, and you have this process where you can cultivate reflective thinking and have cosmic thinking, or you can move towards cosmic insanity, as Lucifer did, and he doesn't have glands. But in the mind system itself, there's this sort of two directions that the mind can be grown towards. just within the context of mindal energy.
I mean, how did Jesus get to fusion? He sought out what equilibrium he could find within his mind, despite the fact that he had been incarnated in that lump and blob of flesh, you know, far removed from a light and life biology. He sought out the equilibrium that he could find in that very limited system and leveraged off of it. He made sure he did nothing to disrupt those little phases of stability that were there, in spite of all of the issues with this world. Right? And he leveraged that, that faint flicker of quality mind upward. Right? And didn't, ultimately was not limited by all of the pits of unascendability in his biology. Right? But, if we start messing with our equilibrium, right, what little phase you might have that you could leverage off of like Jesus did is going to be tilted and lost, and you'll probably slide off of that level plateau and down into one of those pits of your biology.
Yeah.
And never get out of it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting.
You can make
images.
Yourself
well, yeah.
Unascendable.
Wow.
Right? There's plenty of aspects of our biology that is deeply unascendable. If you fall into one of those deep pits, well, then you're not going to make it off. There's not going to be terrestrial escape. I hate to bring it to the topic tonight. And so, that's a fundamental important point, to recognize that how tenuous this is. Right? That something like us, even validity can validly can have the topic of terrestrial escape in play. I mean, Spornaja's, the basic mindedness of a Spornaja is so, superior to ours. And they're not ascendable.
It's been quite a lesson from this arc, yes. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
Okay, so Andrea?
Everyone needs to humbly keep this in mind, not to mention how insidious it can be when you start thinking, I've got the secret formula. This chemical, boy, oh boy, does it make you more spiritual.
Right.
That sounds prideful to me. Is it just me? Or does that sound prideful to you as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sounds stupid.
Yeah, it's so foolish to think that you could improve on a system that you know nothing about.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it doesn't matter if it's like, oh no, there's people that have written vast tomes, 15 volume sets on all the. It's like, no, there isn't any humans that know anything about how the body really works. Right. There's elaborate rationalization schemes that you can believe.
Yeah, when I was
but
5 years old,
human,
my dad was working.
Show me a human that can build the body for one of the prince's staff members.
Yeah.
Okay, and then and then we'll be talking about someone who knows the physics of how a body works.
Right. Just don't try to overimpress anyone. Yeah, stay humble. Don't be me when I was 5 when my dad was working on the car in the driveway and said, I can help. I put sticks and stones on the bumper thinking it would help the weight because there was something wrong with the tires. I'm like, I had no idea what was going on. At least that was cute.
That's a perfect analogy, Brad.
Right, and that's exactly the kind of things that shaman craft have been doing forever and are still doing today, even if they don't call themselves a shaman.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think what you need is a stick right here and a stone right there. Ah, there, see?
There, fixed it.
now your energy's in balance with the cosmos. And no.
No.
I was going to say, well, you mentioned terrestrial escape. Should we go ahead and get our reading going?
Yep. Yeah, and and let me get us teed up here. As we're rolling here. There's a couple of things from last time that didn't have time to mention. A couple cookies, a little bit more extensive. First thing, I just wanted to note that I didn't have time to mention in passing. If you look at that that second paragraph in the Creature Kinship Serials, you know, item number 5 there, back in section 5, remember how in the middle of that paragraph they brought up that kind of mysterious thing that I, you know, just reminded people about what it says in paper 36 and stuff like that, you know, where it says, intelligent beings are vertically related in 12 great groups of 7 major divisions each.
Yes.
Right.
And I pointed out that once you kind of synthetically sort out a lot of the advanced details in the Revelation, you know, it becomes clear that, you know, what the 12 and the 7 are about, you know, in this particular context. That you have a 12-fold individuation of mind unity and a 7-fold individuation of spirit unity. Okay, and think about how often, you know, when we try to talk about some of the physics in the Revelation, you say, okay, set personality aside, you know, so that you don't have personality engaging spirit and, you know, giving you the very useful analogy of spirit over mind over matter. Okay, and if you're just talking about the three energies, right, apart from personality, you know, engaging one of them and, you know, establishing a, you know, a vertical causation order, you know, to them. You know, you have, as I've said many times, you have matter and spirit as the two substances, right, that stand under, right, side by side in a conceptual plane, and the super additive consequence of the relationship between those two energies is a third energy, mind energy. Right? The mind energy is fundamentally above, you know, physical energy and spirit energy. Okay, you can see it right there. Right, you know, the sevenfoldness are divisions of each of the 12-foldness elements.
Hmm.
The mind is above spirit. You have a particular, you know, you have mind above. You take one of those 12 phases, and each one of those mind phases of the 12. See, you know, is associated with 7 spirit phases below.
Hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah. See, so just right there, you can see that physics being pointed out. You know, it's not 7 with 12 divisions each. It's 12 with 7 divisions each. Okay. So there's that little, you know, just kind of physics issue there. And then, you know, one little thing to follow up on, you know, when Justin mentioned it in the review, how we had a rather lengthy discussion playing off of, you know, them mentioning the fact that you have, you know, not just an adjudication of the dead, but of the living and the dead. Remember that,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
in that first paragraph of the Planetary Mortal Epics serials there. And, you know, we got to talking about those issues of dispensational adjudications and all that. And, you know, especially you, Andrea, I could tell you were still a bit befuddled by the complexities of that whole issue of talking about a dispensational resurrection and this whole issue of the adjudication and how that works together. Just quickly go to paper 37, section 3, okay, so the Archangel section, paragraph 6,
okay,
on page 409.
Okay.
And let me just read through that paragraph, 37, 3, 6. two senior archangels are always assigned as the personal aides of a paradise of Vonal on all planetary missions, whether involving judicial actions, magisterial missions, or bestowal incarnations. When this paradise son has finished the judgment of a realm and the dead are called to record, again, the specific thing about your question, notice the parenthetical. Okay, the so-called resurrection.
Oh, okay.
See, the immediacy of what's going on is just everyone is being called to record.
Yes, okay.
Okay. Yeah, but I wanted to go ahead and read the rest of it because it actually feeds into what we're going to be talking about tonight. Yeah. So just, you know, that initial thing, you know, like what's happening right after, you know, Jesus's resurrection, you know, that dispensational, that so-called dispensational resurrection. Yeah. What's happening immediately with the archangel of Michael is, right, is just being, is, you know, sort of just this calling a record, you know, getting, like you said, you know, including the living, right? Everyone is getting all recorded. Okay, so this is the this dispensational group and, you know, et cetera. Yeah. The whole mechanics of actually transporting souls and getting people resurrected and everything, okay, that's, you know, complicated. And they mentioned that a little bit, see here. It is literally true that the seraphic guardians of the slumbering personalities respond to the voice of the archangel. Right? You're, you know, they're pointing out the validity to what's in 1 Thessalonians 4:16 there about the voice of the archangel. And you know, and we're going to be seeing this more tonight of them playing off of passages in the Bible, you know, that are sort of those quote-unquote end-time sorts of passages.
Right.
Right? You know, and explaining, well, it's not all just about end times. It's about, you know, resurrection in general. You know, it's about this whole terrestrial escape issue. Okay. But see, you know, you have that immediacy right there, right, of the seraphic guardians responding, okay? Okay, but, you know, the most they could be doing is, you know, getting ready to, you know, take souls to where they're going to be resurrected.
Right.
Right? They're not going to be resurrected here. Right? They're going to be resurrected in the first mansion world. Okay, so all those technical details are there. But, you know, you have this immediacy with the so-called resurrection, you know, on the planet, like in our case, on our world. And then it says the roll call of a dispensation termination is promulgated by an attendant archangel. This is the archangel of the resurrection, sometimes referred to as the archangel of Michael. And, you know, that reference is bringing in, you know, a very famous controversial passage in the epistle of Jude, you know, Jesus' biologic brother Jude, you know, has that little epistle, one chapter epistle. Jude 1:9, you know, it's, you know, talking about, you know, he's bringing up the assumption of Moses there, Jude is, and the revelators, you know, validate Jude's reference to the assumption of Moses. You know, that happens in papers 52 and 53, right, subsequent to the paper 49 that we're finishing up tonight here.
Yes.
Right, you know, but that whole bit about, you know, there being this archangel of Michael, right? Yeah. With a little clarification, right, that it's, Michael's not the name of the archangel, but it's the archangel of Michael.
Huh.
Okay, but see, just, you know, just mentioning that about 1 Thessalonians and Jude, I mean, okay, you know, these sorts of very, you know, dramatic sorts of passages that a lot of modern thinkers would definitely poo-poo is just mythology. But the, you know, but a key thing about your question is, see, it's the so-called resurrection.
Right.
So a lot of times when you're talking about a dispensational resurrection, you just, you know, you're skipping all of the details of transport and whatnot, right, and just speaking about it in summary fashion.
Right.
But don't let that confuse you. Okay. It doesn't mean magic somehow transcends details. Okay.
Right. Okay. I get it. Yeah. That's good.
Okay. Now, back to paper 49 here. I just wanted a couple things on that paragraph that leads us into tonight. You know, before they get into this lengthy discussion in section 6 about terrestrial escape, they had that little item about how there's, a series, associated with this issue, with the techniques of terrestrial escape. And let's just look at that paragraph again. I'll read it here again to get us spun up for starting section 6. There is fundamentally only one way in which individual human life can be initiated on the inhabited worlds, and that is through creature procreation and natural birth. But there are numerous techniques whereby man escapes his terrestrial status and gains access to the inward-moving stream of paradise ascenders. So the first thing, it should immediately, if you are familiar with the Perfecting Horizons Library, with the contents of the Perfecting Horizons Library, you know that there's a little essay in there called Conception and Birth of a Mortal Ascender.
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful before you read this terrestrial escape section, in terms of studying it in greater detail. But see, notice it's kind of right there in that statement. Okay, the procreation and natural birth. Okay, conception and birth. And the final word is ascenders, right, of a mortal ascender. That paragraph is sort of teeing up that little summary essay that kind of helps sort out some of these issues that I wrote a long time ago. And then one technical point that's very important, as I was teasing up front about the difference between fact and truth. Okay, when it says, there's just one way, right, for it to get initiated, but there are numerous techniques whereby man escapes. Be very cautious not to overplay that.
Yeah.
There's all kind. There's numerous terms of salvation, and sure I'm in one of those numerous terms of salvation. Okay, so what's a simple little statement to help us not go off on that path. It's a place you might not expect to look. It's a simple example of it. If you go to paper 24, section 6, paragraph 9, last little paragraph there, when they introduce us to the graduate guides, wow, this is really out in left field. It's like, graduate guides are related to Hlavona servitals, and you'll see they're going to mention the messenger host of space here as we get started reading tonight. So we're not that far afield, actually, in terms of what they're going to talk about. What does that little paragraph say? It says, graduate guides, they're guides when you're in Hlavona. Graduate guides never leave the Hlavona world. They are dedicated to the service of the graduate pilgrims of time and space. And you will sometime meet these noble beings face to face. Okay, that's all groovy. At this part, like I've so often pointed, there's always an if for something, that one needs to keep in mind. If you do not reject the certain and all-perfected plan designed to affect your survival and ascension, and a very key word there is certain. You have this, in other words, you have this determined, this fixed, plan. In other words, as we were, as we just read in that paragraph in paper 49, there may be numerous techniques whereby man escapes his terrestrial status and gains access to the inward moving stream of paradise ascenders. Factually, there's many. But in truth, there's just the way. Right? When they say, if you do not reject a certain and all perfected plans, they're telling you there is the way. Not many ways, there's the way to affect your survival and ascension.
And that reminds me of this concept of the adjuster trying to eternalize your thinking, and why true religion is insight into spiritual and eternal values, because the way is always rooted in the eternal, not merely the facts of time and space.
And it's based upon God and not us.
Yes.
Right.
We're about to read a section that gets into all kinds of factual details about us and, you know, how, you know, we could do this or we could do that, you know, and ascending and yada, yada, yada. Okay. None of that has anything to do with whether or not you're even involved in that discussion of the different facts. Right. And that's, you know. And you will sometime meet these noble beings face to face. If all you remember is, okay, yeah, it's a definite. I can take my salvation for granted. I'm an ascender. It says, you know, I will sometime meet them. Well, no, if.
Yeah, if you survive.
If you survive. Right? And, again, you know, Jesus came to talk about the love of God, but he, you know, his gospel is the gospel of salvation, you know, and you just can't forget that. That the if part is still there. So in this effort, as we go back to paper 49 here and get started, as we get, like I said before on this series, lots of details, right? But don't lose sight of the big picture. None of this applies to any of us if we haven't done what's required, if we don't meet the terms of salvation, which is not natural. It has to be chosen, even post-Pentecost. Okay.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, always important to bring that up. We can't seem to bring it up often enough here because of the well-known biases of so much of so many Urantia book readers, including this guy here pointing to himself, hopefully just in a former version of himself. I hope I've had that chaff scattered away. But always good to keep it in mind. All right, let's get with the reading so we can wrap up our arc in style tonight. Paper 49, The Inhabited World, Section 6, Terrestrial Escape, page 568 of the original single-column publication. All of the differing physical types and planetary series of mortals alike enjoy the ministry of thought adjusters, guardian angels, and the various orders of the messenger hosts of the infinite spirit. All alike are liberated from the bonds of flesh by the emancipation of natural death, and all alike go thence to the Marantia worlds of spiritual evolution and mind progress.
Okay. So kind of a basic introductory statement. Again, summing up, you have all those physical types we talked about and all those planetary series we talked about. Okay, but when all is said and done, right, you have some very common common foundations, right, to all these different series. Okay, but just notice in the middle, okay, you're going thought adjusters, guardian angels, and then what the various orders of the messenger hosts of space, the messenger hosts of the infinite spirit, I mean, who are they again, and, you know, what's that about, you know? Don't blow by it if you don't immediately remember, you know, who the messenger hosts of space are. Right, you should go look it up. Right, it's in paper 25. And Rona Servital, but, you know, and such is like, you know, I see maybe, you know, why they're bringing that up. Because one of those messenger hosts is the Marantia Companions. No, and so you go, okay, that makes complete sense. You know, they got the guardian angels, right? And then, you know, once I have I'm in the first mansion world and beyond, I've got the Marantia Companions, kind of like guardian angels helping out. Yeah, but that's not all of the messenger hosts of space. There's also what?
The divine
executioner. There's the universal conciliators.
Yeah.
Right. And so, if you look at that list, the two that's like, well, okay, the two that immediately might have something to do with what they're invoking right here, it would have to be the Maranta Companions and the Universal Conciliators. You know, and like I just said, the Maranta Companions seem to fit right into the Guardian Angels. Yeah, but the Universal Conciliators, especially the Divine Executioners, that fits in with the Thought Adjusters. On the one hand, there's the Thought Adjusters, the Lord Giveth. And on the other hand, there's the Divine Executioners, and the Lord Taketh Away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so,
Chris.
See again, between the lines, notice they're not trying to be, they're trying to be gentle, okay? But
they're
it's right there.
They're trying to be fair. Right.
You can't get Thought Adjusters, right, on a one-bladed sword. Okay, it's a double-edged sword. If there's Thought Adjusters, there's Divine Executioners. The more you're given, right, the more is expected of you. Right? And if you screw up, it's serious stuff. Right? No cute little bunny rabbit has to face Divine Executioners. It can't screw up that bad. But a human, especially when they're given a Thought Adjuster, right, has a deep responsibility. Right? And you're being watched. Right. So, that's just a very interesting way to start out talking about terrestrial escape. It's all very exciting. It's like, but don't forget. Okay. There's that if in that sentence that Chris just read. If you survive.
And don't forget all of the different messenger hosts of space, not just the fuzzy Maranta companions.
Yeah.
Would-be fuzzy companions. Yeah. No, I get it.
It's just, it's a very striking little thing to throw in there. They could have just blown by with Thought Adjusters and Guardian Angels like they usually do when they kind of, mentioning this issue. But no, they threw that other one in.
From time to time, on motion of the planetary authorities or the system rulers, special resurrections of the sleeping survivors are conducted. Such resurrections occur at least every millennium of planetary time, when not all but many of those who slept in the dust awake. These special resurrections are the occasion for mobilizing special groups of ascenders for specific service in the local universe plan of mortal ascension. There are both practical reasons and sentimental associations connected with these special resurrections.
Right, and like I was commenting before when we were reading that paragraph there about the archangels in paper 37, right, and you inexorably see them alluding to the Assumption of Moses. There is an example of a special resurrection, like they explain in the Revelation. Moses, taken to, that taking to, that assumption of Moses, that taking to heaven, right, was done in a special resurrection that they're talking about here. And an actual special one, not just the default special one that comes around, every millennium. At least every millennium, as they say there. Sometimes there's ones that are, that are not on the millennial boundaries, like Moses. And, you're immediately in that space of, talking about these kind of interesting topics, lots of controversy in the Bible, including the end time sorts of things. But what do they do? Who do they quote there? Many of those who sleep in the dust awake. Okay, they quote Daniel.
Hmm.
Yeah. When you want to bring in the heavy artillery in Christianity, what do? You bring in Daniel, the Book of Revelation, and Matthew 24.
I wonder if they'll
quote from Matthew 24 here shortly. Let's see.
The rest of that quote in Daniel, it's Daniel 12:2, Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt.
Yeah, the resurrection of the righteous and the wicked. Yeah, another one, you know, of complexity, like the living and the dead one.
When they discuss the mobilization of special group of ascenders for specific service, both practical reasons and sentimental, it makes me think of Michael potentially making the decision of Moses being on the 4 and 20 prior to even his incarnation and being like, yep, we need to make sure we get that guy practically up to where he belongs on the 4 and 20. There's a very specific practical reason for this specific resurrection.
Yeah. Yeah, and notice that, you know, I mean, part of that practical reason, right, that kind of warrants separate note there, you know, is you want, you know, not just a, you know, a group of people that, you know, theoretically, practically could be useful, but if they have to actually have a tendency to work together in a solid association. There's sentimental associations. Right, thoughtful feelings, you know, of, yeah, these people have already kind of built up, you know, that sentiment. Let's keep that going. You know, and that's all kind of interesting. See, that, you know, I mean, we're talking about something that has gotten spiritualized and put into their souls because, you know, their adjutant mind selves that are, you know, immediately sentimental aren't being resurrected. Right? It's their Mirage selves that are being resurrected. Right? So there's an example how, you know, that stuff that's down in the lower domain, like sentiment, right, can get spiritualized and put in your soul, and it's not always a negative thing.
Sure.
They're literally resurrecting this group of people because of what they have in common sentimentally in their souls. Spiritualized sentimentality, as it were.
Hmm. Oh, that's a refreshing thought. Let's not overplay it, though, and turn this back into, you know, oh, so Grandma will be making biscuits. Slow down, cowboy. No. All right. Sorry, Grandma. All right. Throughout the earlier ages of an inhabited world, many are called to the mansion spheres at the special and the millennial resurrections, but most survivors are repersonalized at the inauguration of a new dispensation associated with the advent of a divine son of planetary service.
Yeah, you know, as we're, you know, we'll read here in the next paragraph, you know, you have a very primitive starting point. You know, so you don't want to immediately be thinking of, oh, well, you know, everyone's a third circler and, you know, there's an individual ascender and yada, 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 right? You know, it starts out as tenuous can be in terms of anyone being able to get off the rock they're born on.
Mm-hmm. I can live with that. I've, so to speak, I've never had this need some people seem to have in their sentimental mind or whatever to say, I must be a third circler or I must be an individual ascender and it must only take 3 days to wake up. I've just never, like, it's easy for some reason for me to just trust that if I'm righteous, like, I'll show up. I'll be shuttled to the place that I need to at the appropriate time. And what's it to me? I close my eyes down here. I open them up there, God willing.
Yeah, I feel sort of the same way, Brad. But I also wonder about the special resurrections and whether there could be a place for those who have been studying the Urantia book in the future program. And then I also wonder about Revelations 14, 3-5, where they talk about the 144,000 who, you know, will be resurrected. I mean, what do you think that has any merit at all? That seems pretty.
Right, that's just a tiny little, yeah, you know, numerology number from the Hebrews, right? I mean, you know, again, you know, there's lots, I mean, you know, you combining readers' thoughts, you know, with Jewish fantasies from 2,000 years ago, right? You know the additions to what John actually saw in his vision, you know, that are in the Book of Revelation. You know, and it's, you know, it's the same issue, right? That Brad was just pointing to. We don't survive because we have some sort of humanistic thing going on, you know, as a group of self-aggrandizing Jews or self-aggrandizing readers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, again, right, you know, salvation is not on our terms.
Mm-hmm.
We have to figure out
right. What
those terms are, like I was just stressing. You know, there's the potential for a working group on this planet to, you know, to do things, you know, as ascenders, but they have to survive. You know, they don't survive just because they're a nice working group here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They have to actually have survival value. And if they're, you know, if they're just a bunch of humanists, they don't.
Right, sure.
You know, one thing about that paragraph that stands out to me, and the Revelators do this often, they use the phrase, many are called to the mansion worlds, and then they contrast that with, but most, and they could say few and most, but instead they keep things in that sort of positive light by contrasting many and most, and you have to really focus in on the differential there.
Out of potentially millions and millions and millions and millions, okay, many is like 50.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't mention that. You know, they quote, they had that ability to quote there, from Daniel, you know, because it's like, you know, if you notice, Daniel actually pointed out that you can have, you know, a bunch of people, right, that are sleeping survivors, but they aren't all resurrected. You know, some subset of them are, right? You know, and so it's just, you know, again, remember, it's very likely that Daniel was a cosmic reservist.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the one way you could frame this is you could think of literally the numbers of the reservists and how low they are compared to the total population. You're like, wow, that's a very small number.
Not a destiny reservist, you know, but that, you know. Yeah, Daniel, you know, probably wasn't a destiny reservist. He was probably a cosmic reservist. He may have known a number of things. So it's not surprising that you might be able to point to some very precise little thing and say, oh, I don't know, you're just, you know, selectively finding something that coincidentally fits. It's like, no, Daniel isn't just a random somebody. Yeah, and the Revelators validate that he understood things that, you know, people today don't even understand. Okay, and that are only being explained to us in the fifth epical revelation.
Hmm. Wow. Hadn't thought of that.
He's working with midwares, for Pete's sake, okay? Writing on the wall, that sort of stuff. Okay, but
right.
Yeah, but again, here, before we, you know, get into item number one, you know, see, again, just, you know, if you're ever confused in spots in the book where it seems like maybe there's just millennial and dispensational, it's like, no, see, special and millennial and dispensational. Okay, there's three different resurrection mechanisms or modes, I should say. Yeah, not two, three.
Okay.
Okay. So
here we go. So now we're in a numbered list, a large numbered list. There's five items. This is item number one. Number one, mortals of the dispensational or group order of survival. With the arrival of the first adjuster on an inhabited world, the guardian seraphim also make their appearance. They are indispensable to terrestrial escape. Throughout the life lapse period of the sleeping survivors, the spiritual values and eternal realities of their newly evolved and immortal souls are held as a sacred trust by the personal or by the group guardian seraphim.
Okay, and again, you know, as Brad was saying up front, this is item number one of five. Okay, remember, these are five, you know, different series, right? You know, we're expanding on, you know, on our final item, you know, item number seven in the preceding section, right? And so you can have a series of the mortals of the dispensational or group order of survival, you know, et cetera. You know, and very much remembering that you have, you know, these distinct transitions of human nature. When you go through those planetary mortal epochs. Okay, now as an example of how things are distinguished. Anyway, that when it says with the arrival of the first adjuster on an inhabited world, okay, the guardian seraphim also make their appearance. Okay, see, they just mentioned the two there. Yeah. Noah. Oh yeah, don't forget about the divine executioners or Raja companions. I see. So, yeah, like I say, usually, right? You see, it's kind of gentle. Remember how that worked on this planet. Because of this decimal world thing and the, you know, pre-Sangic race. The first personal guardian, you know, was in Red Man.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, keep in mind, okay, I mean, you know Andon and Fonta survived. Okay, so, you know, they were adjusters, and, okay, but, you know, how this is spread out on our world, you know, and getting the whole adjuster seraphim thing rolling because of 500,000 years before you have Sangics. And, of course, the indispensable, the terrestrial escape, I mean, you don't have a soul if you don't have an adjuster, right? And if you don't have a guardian seraphim, there's no one to take possession of your soul when you die. The janitor, you know, Bob the janitor, the celestial janitor, can't just, you know, pick it up and stick it in the box and, you know, you'll get resurrected. You have to have a guardian seraphim. It's the only being that can take possession of your soul, you know, and secure it, deliver it to the resurrection halls.
Now, how many can they secure at one time is the question.
Yeah, how many can they, you know, there's, and kind of getting in that, the final thing they talk about is group guardian seraphim.
Yes.
Okay, and first thing we want to notice, when they say group order of survival, okay, that means special millennial dispensational. That's what that word group means. But group guardian seraphim, that has nothing to do with special millennial dispensational. That has to do with whether or not you have, you know, quote-unquote personal, you know, or group guardians. You know, one pair of seraphim for 1,000, one pair of seraphim for 500, you know, et cetera.
Yes.
Right? So two different uses of the word group there. Okay, but the thing that's kind of curious is, well, wait a minute. I mean, aren't we talking about at the beginning here? I mean, you got to get the third circler to have a personal guardian seraphim. Why are they mentioning that? Well, two things. One, I mean, you know, this opening paragraph is not getting specific totally yet on item number one. It's giving you some just general thing. Right? And so in general, you know, you could have a personal or a group. But there is a relevancy to our world, because remember, until Pentecost, 2,000 years ago, from the time, 200,000 years ago, the time of the rebellion, until Pentecost, 2,000 years ago, no one on this planet, could ascend individually. The way that works, which they don't explain the physics of it, was short-circuited. And so it didn't matter if you were a third circler, first circler, second, third circler, right? You were stuck.
Not even Moses.
Survivor.
Yeah.
Okay, so in our case, you could definitely be a long-time sleeping survivor and still have a personal guardian seraphim.
Well, that's a good point, a fine point in that paragraph, but it's there. Yeah, good point, Chris. The group guardians of assignment to the sleeping survivors always function with the judgment sons on their world advents. He shall send his angels, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds. With each seraphim of assignment to the repersonalization of a sleeping mortal, there functions the returned adjuster, the same immortal father fragment that lived in him during the days in the flesh, and thus is identity restored and personality resurrected. During the sleep of their subjects, these waiting adjusters serve on Divinington. They never indwell another mortal mind in this interim.
I told you Matthew 24 was coming. There it is. See, so they're hitting the heavyweight, parts of the Bible. We've got Daniel and Matthew 24.
The elect.
And of course, in contrast to its, the parallel version of Matthew 24 that's in Mark, you can see they're specifically here in Matthew because, you have that precision of he shall send his angels, but they, shall gather together his elect. As opposed, it's not so clear in Mark. Where you have he sending and gathering.
Huh, okay, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Again, leveraging off precision, like I mentioned in Daniel. Big picture, it's Daniel in Matthew 24. End times sort of stuff, right? We'll get to this issue in a moment here in a little more clarity when we get further along. But thus is identity restored, and in the eyes of the universe, the arrival of the adjuster constitutes identity.
Yes.
And why? It's like, well, wait a minute. I mean, I thought, personality identification, makes myself an identity. But remember, please, personality is spirit pattern, spirit substance pattern. Okay, and your mind's not spirit substance. Okay, but effectively, the adjuster is a spirit fragment. Like when you're in the forward and you're reading, body, mind, spirit, soul. Right? The spirit there is the adjuster, right? Not your personality management or whatnot, or spirit ministries. It's a literal stuff, right? An object. So that's why they're using that identity thing here. But remember right now, as we pointed out, your personality is not influencing directly your Maranja mindal self right now. That's seated on, that mind that's seated on your soul, that Maranja soul. It's influencing your adjutant mind. So this resurrection, that quote-unquote identity will be restored when the adjuster plugs back into that soul, that Maranja brain that now has a Maranja body built for it. Okay, but that personality then is going to, be directly influencing that Maranja mindal self, like it isn't right now. So there's that difference about the personality resurrected issue.
I like what they say here, they never indwell another mortal mind in this interim. I wouldn't like that.
So he goes and dwells in another mind and infuses with it, and that guy stole your adjuster.
I would feel like he was two-timing me, It's like, no. You just wait for
him. Not to mention, you couldn't be resurrected then.
Yeah.
You can only be resurrected with that adjuster.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're not a spirit fuser, you're a father fuser. You must have that adjuster again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad all this stuff works, and I don't even have to do any mystical incantations or sticks and stones. The cosmos was designed to allow me to ascend. I just have to be humble. The work that I do is inner life work. Yeah.
I mean, if sticks and stones is an effective psychologic procedure, go ahead. But I won't stop you. But As a student of the fifth epical revelation, one might want to challenge such primitive notions.
Yes. All right. Justin, would you like to take the reading from here?
Sure. Thanks, Brad. While the older worlds of mortal existence harbor those highly developed and exquisitely spiritual types of human beings who are virtually exempt from the Rancha life, the earlier ages of the animal origin races are characterized by primitive mortals who are so immature that fusion with their adjuster is impossible. The reawakening of these mortals is accomplished by the guardian seraphim in conjunction with an individualized portion of the immortal spirit of the third source and center.
And so again, in the middle there, you know, we see a very direct reference to you know, when you're talking about the planetary mortal epics, that you have a different type of human, right, in each dispensation. I mean, remember, quote-unquote, you know, the technical term primitive mortal is the type of human that's, you know, prior to the prince's dispensation. Right? And see, before humans have been modified, as they are, post-arrival of the planetary prince, I mean, you know, you don't have a mind that can fuse with his autogesser.
Yeah. Right.
Unless there's some very cool thing in play. Right? But as a general rule, you know, we're talking about spirit fusers. So, you know, let's not go off on tangents about, you know, exceptions to the rule. You know, they're speaking as a rule, right? So you don't, you know, they can, that type of being is so minimal, right, that it can't fuse with its autogester. Okay, but it can fuse with, you know, effectively a spirit fragment of the third source and center, like they're saying. Okay, but not directly the third source and center. First, you have to downstep that spirit nature into the particular master spirit of your super universe, and then you have to downstep it further into the particular creative mother spirit of your local universe, and then you have something, right, that when you fragment it, right, that, you know, that it can be fused to that resurrected mortal's mind. And remember, you know, the moment that a spirit fuser is resurrected on the first mansion world, they fuse.
Yes.
Yeah. There isn't some time delay. I mean, you know, they're resurrected by fusing them with that that fragment of the creative mother spirits.
Oh,
you know, when
right.
when you're contrasting these older worlds with the highly developed types and exquisite spiritual types with the primitive mortals, one thing that comes to mind, especially the description of exquisitely spiritual types, it makes me think of 110.4.6, that sort of warning where they say, this is an alarming picture, and the supervising personalities of Satania look with favor upon the proposals of some of your more immediate planetary supervisors who advocate the inauguration of measures designed to foster and conserve the higher spiritual types of the Urantia races. If we're lacking those higher spiritual types in our current state, our current flavor of human, and the planetary immediate supervisors are advocating that we need to preserve these, do something, it kind of gives you, paints a picture. We're definitely leaning more in the primitive side of the mortal flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that whole bit of, you know, when things fall apart with the rebellion and the default in terms of you know, cleaning up the human population, as it were, and getting them into a tightly, you know, packed distribution of nature, right, that then can be, you know, moved forward, you know, and modified into the next dispensational type of human. I say, well, you know, we don't have that. And so, you know, you get this upgrade, say, 2,000 years ago, right, and, you know, for this new dispensation of man, okay, but some of the people that are being upgraded are, you know, are very, you know, I mean, we literally have subhumans, right, walking around that look like us, right? And so, you know, if you literally have subhumans, you've got, you know, minimal humans all the way up to that border of being, you know, literally subhuman. And so, you know, it's one thing to take a post-magisterial sun man and upgrade him to a post-bestowal sun man, right? But if you take a primitive human, technically it's post-bestowal sun man, but...
Yeah, that explains why they're interested in us, studying us.
Yeah, right. There are some that, even if it isn't a biologic thing, you know, just a will thing, if it's, you know, willfully, it's sad to record that you don't take delight in cultivating. And it's even worse if, right, if your biology is so minimal, a supreme effort of will maybe gets you to a post-planetary prince man state.
Oh, boy.
Okay, cool.
All right, let's be humble here. Thus are the sleeping survivors of a planetary age repersonalized in the dispensational roll calls. But with regard to the non-solvable personalities of a realm, no immortal spirit is present to function with the group guardians of destiny, and this constitutes cessation of creature existence. While some of your records have pictured these events as taking place on the planets of mortal death, they all really occur on the Magian worlds.
Again, Andrea, when I was talking up front, you can see them trying to help clarify all of this. You know, it's not only so-called resurrection, but okay, it's not literally happening on the nativity sphere, and, you know, despite the way it might appear that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense now.
Yeah. And, again, notice, you know, this whole time, ever since that first paragraph, we've been talking about group guardians, you know, the whole personal guardian thing is, right, that's really about the next, you know, series here with the individual orders of ascension. And we also see here, you know, very, very clearly, right, what I often, point out that, you know, if you've gone to iniquity, you know, during your life in the flesh, okay, I mean, post Pentecost, everyone has a soul, okay, so there's an empty soul that the group guardian will take possession of and take to the first Magian world, and they literally build a body and put that Marantia brain into it. I mean, it's not like, you know, that group guardian isn't functioning. It says here specifically to function with the group guardians, okay? So they go through that whole process, okay, but the adjuster doesn't return, and so it doesn't reanimate. Now, you don't reanimate that iniquitous soul.
An empty soul, but it still has enough substance to allow personalization and construction.
Right. It has a matrix.
Yeah,
that the adjuster could plug into. Remember, the adjuster was plugged into it when it went to iniquity, okay?
Yeah.
There's a matrix there. There's an object that the guardian seraphim took possession of, and they went through the whole process of the so-called resurrection of the wicked, right? But the adjuster doesn't thread back in to the... the warp of that soul.
Right.
And so, it's not animate. And because it's not Marantia mind doesn't seat on it again, and, you know, we're off to the races.
That's a judgment that doesn't have to take place from the Ancients of Days or even in this super universe. That's a judgment from God himself, the adjuster not showing back up.
And that's why you go, well, I mean... Yeah, so, I mean, why mention the divine executioners? I mean, that's not immediately relevant to your life in the flesh, you know, like they did up front there. Well, neither are Marantia companions. Okay. But, you know, you have to get resurrected 7 times to get through the Magian world.
Yeah.
right? And there you've got a Maharaja body that needs to be executed.
So they execute your body, huh?
Right. I mean, it isn't like here. At the very least, you could say, well, I mean, the Maharaja power supervisor will let go of the body, and the body will just unravel, so the divine executioner doesn't need to execute it. Yeah, but there's a soul. It's empty, but there's a literal Maharaja object there. Right, that the Maharaja power supervisors had nothing to do with the existence of. The adjuster built it.
Right.
The divine executioner will unbuild it.
I kind of wonder if the adjuster doesn't show up, if it went ahead, you know, it knows it's not going to show up, so it goes ahead and indwells another mortal mind. You know,
oh, yeah. I mean, in the moment the adjuster left you during your mortal life, okay, it gets reassigned.
Okay.
Yeah, that's spiritual death.
Yeah.
You're done. It's not coming back. The adjuster isn't going to just sit around for, you know, for your dispensational resurrection of the wicked. I mean, it's, you know, it gets a new assignment on Divinington.
Yeah, okay.
Number two, mortals of the individual orders of ascension. The individual progress of human beings is measured by their successive attainment and traversal mastery of the seven cosmic circles. These circles of mortal progression are levels of associated intellectual, social, spiritual, and cosmic insight values. Starting out in the seventh circle, mortals strive for the first, and all who have attained the third immediately have personal guardians of destiny assigned to them. These mortals may be repersonalized in the Maharaja life independent of dispensational or other adjudications.
Okay, so here we are finally, you know, getting to actually having personal guardian seraphim, because, you know, and becoming an the series that is the individual orders of ascension. And notice, you know, here's one of those places where, you know, instead of potentially confusingly, right, instead of calling them the seven psychic circles, right, because they're literally cosmic levels, right, they call them cosmic circles. And see, and notice, you know, they explain that word cosmic and cosmic circles doesn't just mean cosmic insight, right, but holistically cosmic, intellectual, social, spiritual, in other words, personality management, and cosmic insight. You know, and so again, see, I mean, if you're thinking about, are you a third circler? Okay, well, how are you intellectually, relative to the run-of-the-mill person? How are you socially relative to the run-of-the-mill individual? How are you in personality management? How are you in cosmic insight? How are you super summatively in all those? So it's that very holistic, development that's required. They aren't the seven sentimental circles. The more sentimental you are, the lower circler you are. Just to put a fine point on that.
Well, they hint at that with that word mastery. They're hinting at what you're describing.
Yes, mastery. Yes. And again, just notice all the precision that you've got, see, in some of these things here. Like, you know, usually we're just talking about, psychic circles in a very, passing way. Okay, here, there's attaining that circle. Okay, but it has a width to it. Then you have to traverse the whole circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? To get to the attainment of the next one.
It's vertical and horizontal.
Yeah, and so, you become, you attain first circler, okay, but then you have to go, and then you have to traverse the whole, width of that first circle. And not to mention, like they point out, okay, then you attain, after traversing the first, then you attain the zeroth, Right. You know, the post-first circler phase that you have to traverse, that final synchronization with the adjuster that they talk about, you know, when they get into those details. But the fact that you can kind of, you know, get the space for that post-first circler, you have to recognize that each of these circles has a space to it, right? That there's a, you know, a breadth that has to be traversed, you know, instead of thinking of it in such, you know, in the same way that, I mean, yes, you know, they use the circle thing because of the circles of Avona. I mean, yes, you have kind of these seven linear circles. Okay, but is there just one world on each circle? No. See, and the number of worlds on those circles is parallel to this width that you have to traverse.
You know, on one level, when I think of the traversal aspect of these cosmic levels, I think of the harmonization of the three selves. But on another level, I kind of imagine that you're focused in on these two consecrations, the consecration of your mind to the harmony of the cosmos and the consecration of your will to the perfect will of the Father, but there's different upgrades to those consecrations regarding intellectual, social, spiritual, and cosmic insight values. But the consecrations remain the same regardless of seventh, sixth, fifth, fourth circle. The consecrations are always in play. It's just you're grown to where that consecration has a little more significance to it. But the consecrations are there throughout.
Right. Not unlike on the Mansion World, you have a certain capacity, and you consecrate to the fullness of it, and then you're given an upgrade to a bigger capacity, and then you have to consecrate to the fullness of that. And
Yes.
See, again, there's always this, you know, it's one thing to kind of, you know, have that initiation point, which is parallel to the consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. Okay, but then there's the whole breadth of it, right, which involves the consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother.
Yes.
You attain through the Father, you traverse through the Mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Throughout the earlier ages of an evolutionary world, few mortals go to judgment on the third day. But as the ages pass, more and more the personal guardians of destiny are assigned to the advancing mortals, and thus increasing numbers of these evolving creatures are repersonalized on the first Mansion World on the third day after natural death. On such occasions, the return of the adjuster signalizes the awakening of the human soul, and this is the repersonalization of the dead, just as literally as when the en masse roll is called at the end of a dispensation on the evolutionary worlds.
Yeah. And then, you know, we should, if anyone is still confused, we've often talked about, if there's a transport time, okay, it can't literally be on the third day. For us to get to the first Mansion World, actually within our guardian seraphim, who is then in seraphim and transported, that's roughly a 5-year journey. So it isn't literally on the third day, right? If you fused with your adjuster here in your life in the flesh, okay, then it literally will be on the third day, right? Because the adjuster, goes from here to the first Mansion World instantaneously.
And you're along for the ride, even though you're still
your
a Mirage's soul.
Your soul is along for the ride.
somehow, we don't know the... Yeah.
See, another reason why, how different that soul is from your Mirage body. I mean, if you had a Mirage body, hanging on that adjuster, then the whole thing would need to be in seraphim and hauled at 3 times the speed of light max. See, that Mirage object soul is something very curious, the sequence of Ascendington. It doesn't self-unravel, right? If you go to iniquity on the first or second Mansion World, the Divine Executioner is going to unravel it. Yeah, because, again, God made it, so only God, a Divine Executioner, can undo it.
Well,
the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Yeah. Well, I know we need to keep moving, but obviously there are a lot of readers who hang all of their favorite personal, selfish, whatever, hopes on. They hang on this one paragraph, third day. They said it twice in a row. They ignore all the other things about third period, and they say, I'm going to pick this paragraph. It's my favorite. I mean, is there anything else to say about their use of third day here other than they're invoking traditional biblical imagery and metaphors?
Right, you've got that. I mean, you know, they're definitely playing off of Jesus' resurrection. And like I said, I mean, if you don't have to be transported, like say, if you're in the probationary nursery, okay, and you're literally resurrected on the third day in the first imagined world because it's a short trip. Right.
Right.
Or Jesus didn't have to be transported because they brought all the raunchy stuff from the first imagined world here.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
So he could resurrect himself here. Okay.
That's so strange.
Okay. Again, you know, he's not magical. They had to bring all the stuff here, right? You know, he is doing it himself, okay, which is a little different. Okay, but nonetheless, he's not doing it magically.
Right.
You know? He needs a Maranja body. It means you have to have Maranja, power supervisors here and all that stuff, right? Okay. You can't just let those three times that they remind you technically it's the third period slip by.
Right.
There are three groups of individual ascenders. The less advanced land on the initial or first mansion world. The more advanced group may take up the Maranja career on any of the intermediate mansion worlds in accordance with previous planetary progression. The most advanced of these orders really begin the Maranja experience on the seventh mansion world.
Yeah, so that seventh one, where, you're organized into a group that's going to be taken to Gerasim as opposed to the very individual process getting to the seventh mansion world. So you can kind of think about how it breaks into three flavors there. When resurrection is just on the mansion world. But here's another example, okay? I mean, you go, well, no, I mean, it looks like I die and I'm resurrected, directly on the fourth mansion world. No, you have to take into account another thought to explain, well, okay, technically, you're resurrected on the first mansion world, you're there for 10 days, and then you're resurrected on the second, you're there for 10 days, and on the third,
yes,
for 10 days, and then you're resurrected on the fourth and you stay there.
Yeah.
Okay. See, so, the book, you can't read it in some simplistic, pedantic fashion, you have to synthesize with everything else in the Revelation. Abstracting sentences from the Revelation is a very mistake-ridden process.
And yet, probably everyone listening here gets at least one of the daily emails from one of the organizations with a deeply abstracted quote. So it goes.
Number three, mortals of the probationary dependent orders of ascension. The arrival of an adjuster constitutes identity in the eyes of the universe, and all indwelt beings are on the roll calls of justice. But temporal life on the evolutionary worlds is uncertain, and many die in youth before choosing the paradise career. Such adjuster indwelt children and youths follow the parent of most advanced spiritual status, thus going to the system finaliter world, the probationary nursery, on the third day, at a special resurrection, or at the regular millennial and dispensational roll calls.
If one parent is resurrected immediately, and the other is, sleeping until a dispensation, that child is reconstructed in the probationary nursery, immediately when that one parent is resurrected. But again, we've already read in this arc, and we're talking the natural parents here, the biologic parents. See, there it is explicitly, the arrival of an adjuster constitutes identity in the eyes of the universe. And they mentioned the third day again. You're going, see, there's the third day again. Remember, we saw that also in this arc. I mean, basically, you know, remember, you're not even given a name until you fuse with your adjuster. And so, you know, the foundational way of talking about us is, okay, these are creatures that are born on a nativity sphere. They fuse with their adjuster, and then they go to the mansion worlds. It's like, well, wait a minute. Well, I'm not going to fuse. Yeah, okay, well, you know, it's because you're defective. I mean, again, the basic modality is resurrection on the third day because there is no transport issue because you fuse, you know, in your life in the flesh as you're supposed to. And so, again, you have to remember they're often, you know, taking things out of time and speaking more in the truths of eternity here.
That's helpful.
Children who die when too young.
One second.
Sorry,
just, not to mention, before there when we were talking about it, and about how, as the ages pass, more and more you get personal guardians and that sort of thing. On our world, we didn't get the first personal guardians until that red man. 500,000 years plus. And see, it's got to be plus because as the ages pass, it's like, okay, so it was probably a ways. That red man was probably, well past 500,000 years ago, when finally you got the first personal guardians, right? The first person got to the third circle. So just all of these issues, keep in mind, there's always details, but the revelators don't, complicate every time they talk about this stuff with all of the details. You have to keep those details in mind.
I'll read one more paragraph and then pass the reading on to you, Andrea. Children who die when too young to have thought adjusters are repersonalized on the finaliter world of the local system concomitant with the arrival of either parent on the mansion worlds. A child acquires physical entity at mortal birth, but in the matter of survival, all adjusterless children are reckoned as still attached to their parents. The precision with the physical entity versus what they referenced about identity in the first beginning of part three here.
Not to mention, like I said, you have material conception and birth, you have minal conception and birth, expanding all these framing statements out in that conception and birth of a mortal ascender is what I do. The literalness of the mindal attachment, it's kind of in parallel to them talking about here, I think more, in that early phase, but nonetheless, right, you recognize the literal attachment mindally until roughly age 16 and putting all these statements together into a logical whole.
Okay.
All right.
In due course, we just read that one. Similar probation.
No, that's right.
No,
that's where we are.
Okay, sorry about that. In due course, thought adjusters come to indwell these little ones, while the seraphic ministry to both groups of the probationary dependent orders of survival is in general similar to that of the more advanced parent, or is equivalent to that of the parent in case only one survives. Those attaining the third circle, regardless of the status of their parents, are accorded personal guardians.
So, if the parent is in a group of 500, then, one of those 500 is their child. Right, but if the parent is still in group status, but the child is precocious and gets the third circler, the parents don't hold the child back.
Overachiever. Okay. Similar probation nurseries are maintained on the finaliter spheres of the constellation and the universe headquarters for the adjusterless children of the primary and secondary modified orders of ascenders. I get that now.
So they're going to, we're going to talk about those next. Right? The primary and secondaries is when you skip over, say at least the mansion worlds. And so, you know, they're pointing out that, you know, if, let's say, you know, someone is, you know, of a primary, you know, order, you know, and, you know, the world is deep and light and life, okay, that doesn't mean they still couldn't have had a child that died before it was born.
Okay.
And so, you know, even if they go straight to Salvington from their nativity sphere, I mean, there's a probation nursery there at the universe headquarters. See, for those adjusterless children, you know, so that parent or those parents, see, have the opportunity to engage that child in those pre-adjuster years. We know how important, you know, those early years are. Roughly eight. Now, if it's an adjuster child, okay, see, obviously this could get complicated, right, in terms of that child being, you know, in the probationary nursery of their local system, but the parent is jumping ahead. It's like, well, if it's a modified order, you know they're about to tell us that the parent has to go back anyway before they can ascend. And so, you know, it all works out. It can get a little complicated. Yeah. But just, you know, notice that provision is made, you know. You know, if a child is lost, you know, at a very young age or even pre-birth, there's probation nurseries at the Constellation and the Universe headquarters.
Right. Got it. Number four, mortals of the secondary modified orders of ascension. These are the progressive human beings of the intermediate evolutionary worlds. As a rule, they are not immune to natural death, but they are exempt from passing through the seven mansion worlds.
Okay, so even when we're talking about going up to the mansion worlds, you get to the seventh, you know, and they remind you about how you're leaving the resurrection halls behind and all that. Okay, but okay, that's just, you know, for you ascending up through there. Yeah, but if you're, you know, if you die in your nativity sphere and get resurrected on the system headquarters world, okay, there's a resurrection hall there for you, right? It's just that the ones going up to the mansion world, you know, don't have to go through a resurrection hall anymore. They've done that seven times, and they're done with that. But if you're skipping over all that, okay, you know, so there has to be resurrection halls, you know, even all the way up to Salvington.
The less perfected group reawaken on the headquarters of their local system, passing by only the mansion worlds. The intermediate group go to the Constellation training worlds. They pass by the entire Marantu regime of the local system. Still farther on in the planetary ages of spiritual striving, many survivors awaken on the Constellation headquarters, and there begin the Paradise Ascent.
So just like the, you know, the prior series, there's three subcategories. Again, just, you know, so much, you know, re-emphasizing the precise hierarchical nature of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and how your fuzzing it out continuum consciousness, your unity consciousness, you know, is not going to serve you well in thinking about the physics of the universe. It's very, you know, individuated, precise, and hierarchical, and everything has wheels within wheels.
But before forward, they journey back as instructors to the worlds they missed, gaining many experiences as teachers in those realms which they passed by as students. They all subsequently proceed to paradise by the ordained routes of mortal progression.
Make sure you stay close to your mic. You were fading a little bit there.
Okay.
So there, you know, I hinted at that to you. You know, one of the ways you can think about, you know, how you can manage this bit with the probation nurseries is, you know, all of these secondary ones, they can go back, you know, but you still can end up with some thinking about, it's like, wow, so if I have a child in the probationary nursery at the local universe headquarters, okay, so they go through their probation nursery, okay, but, you know, they're going to have to give back to that, you know, their local system and go through the mansion worlds, and that could be a very long trip, right? So it can get complicated with the travel times and stuff. Okay.
So interesting. Number five, mortals of the primary modified order of ascension. These mortals belong to the adjuster-fused type of evolutionary life, but they are most often representative of the final phases of human development on an evolving world. These glorified beings are exempt from passing through the portals of death. They are submitted to sun seizure. They are translated from among the living and appear immediately in the presence of the sovereign sun on the headquarters of the local universe.
Again, you know, even if the distance is from your nativity sphere to the local universe headquarters, it's an instantaneous trip if you've fused. Right? And so it's going to be a third day affair, right? Literally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Literally, yeah.
So...
And again, sun seizure,
right? I mean, you know, again, you think, you know, why didn't, like we say, someone, you know, legally seized, you know, my land. I took possession, legal possession of my land. Right, the seizure, sun seizure, you know, that soul fused to that adjuster is immediately seized, quote, unquote, the sun's spirit gravity takes possession of it and brings it right to him.
Hmm. That's even true for
the spirit gravity of the greater sun.
Does this have to be a being who's already spiritually advanced relative to their world, or did Elijah get seized and end up on Salvington in an instant, and then had to go back to be on the 4 and 20? You know.
Well, again, you know, they're about to bring that up. You know. But, you know, again, he was, you know, selected for the 4 and 20, and so, you know, that, you know,
right.
If there had been a possibility for him to jump, that would have been short-circuited. It's like, no, don't jump, you know, keep him at the local
right.
system. Yeah.
Yeah, all taken care of.
These are the mortals who fuse with their adjusters during mortal life, and such adjuster-fused personalities traverse space freely before being clothed with Marantia forms. These fused souls go by direct adjuster transit to the resurrection halls of the higher Marantia spheres, where they receive their initial Marantia investiture, just as do all other mortals arriving from the evolutionary worlds.
Or more prosaically, they build you a Marantia body.
Mm-hmm.
All said very poetically there, right? You know, and again, see, I've already spoken to that. That, you know, if you've got adjuster transport, right, you know, an adjuster can transport this very curious thing called a soul, that Marantia brain that it built, okay, but nothing else. And if you attach a Marantia body, okay, no, you know, no more instantaneous transport.
Okay, got it. This primary modified order of mortal ascension may apply to individuals in any of the planetary series, from the lowest to the highest stages of the adjuster fusion worlds, but it more frequently functions on the older of these spheres, after they have received the benefits of numerous sojourns of the divine suns.
Yeah, see, so that, you know, pointing out Brad there, see that detail. I mean, okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, you basically have to get, you know, the human modified by dispensational adjustments, you know, up to a pretty high level, not to mention probably all the biologic engineering, you know, that the material sun is overseeing, you know, I mean, all
mm-hmm.
kinds of advancement of human nature before this is likely to be in play.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. With the establishment of the planetary era of light and life, many go to the universe Marantia worlds by the primary modified order of translation. Further along in the advanced stages of settled existence, when the majority of the mortals leaving a realm are embraced in this class, the planet is regarded as belonging to this series. Natural death becomes decreasingly frequent on these spheres, long settled in light and life. And this is presented by a Melchizedek of the Jerusalem School of Planetary Administration.
And one day, you know, he'll be your professor. you come in here.
I love your work,
all
professor.
Full of mush.
Yeah. I've already got the T-shirt. I've already got the T-shirt. It's got the three concentric circles, and it says, hoping to get into Melchizedek U.
Yeah, and then there's getting all the way to Salvington and the full-on Melchizedek University, yes. Notice here, finally, in the final paragraph, you've got the word series. Oh, yeah, I remind you. Yeah, that, see, you can, and notice how they're clarifying this, right? When the majority of mortals leaving a realm or embracing this class of planet is regarded as belonging to this series. So, there's all kinds of details to, how these terrestrial escape issues, right, get treated as series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But nonetheless, right, sure enough, we've expanded on the series thing from the preceding section.
I heard Bill Sadler Jr. Musing once on one of those tapes that they put out years ago, back from 1958 or 59, about how, this would be the last holdout of polite society. It's like, oh, are you kidding? The Smiths? Oh, I heard, you can't marry one of those people. They still die.
It was a little bit hard to understand you there. You were kind of breaking up. But
how when it comes to the point where people are not dying a natural death, but the people that are dying a natural death are sort of looked down upon.
No, remember we already went through that. I think that was last week, wasn't it? When they talked about how no one is looked down upon.
Right. Yeah.
You're the whole bit of social classes being indispensable is way in the rearview mirror.
Okay.
Life is just seen more objectively in that high civilization. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And again, we often talk about that. I mean, we can talk about all these different modes of essentially, like, oh, well, you're a nobody if you don't experience sun seizure, or you're a nobody if you don't become a phenolator. It's like, well, if you had a child that died young and is going to be resurrected in a probationary nursery, is that really the way you want to think about that child? That because they're not going to become a phenolator, they're a nobody?
Yeah.
Yeah. They get to be a permanent paradise citizen. You have to go back off paradise and go back to the trenches and minister to, meatballs like us.
Not to mention that the Supreme needs some of those sun-fused, those million sun-fused beings, so Bob had to die.
There's so many different paths, and they all have a place. When all is said and done, Universal Father is no respecter of persons.
All right. Well, folks, that brings us to here just under a minute. Thanks for being with us here on this long arc. Next week, we're going to be starting a new arc. Also in our new arc in March here on Symmetry of Soul, we're going to be trying out a new additional format. In addition to this Tuesday broadcast, which is not changing at all, starting in March, we're going to be offering short 25-minute podcasts where some of us from Symmetry of Soul further reflect on topics of the arc. Just check our website, symmetryofsoul.org, in the coming weeks for more information about how we're going to be trying that out. We hope that you'll join us on those podcasts as well. But until then, we'll see you back here next Tuesday on a new arc. Do your best to follow the way.
Take care, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Yes, and thank you, my co-hosts, for a great show. And thank you, everyone, for joining us on this arc. I hope everyone enjoyed it. And as Brad said, we have something with a bit of a change of pace slated for you next Tuesday. Tune in and see where we go next. Bye now.